Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host this afternoon. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. This week, we're going to be focusing on several missing and abused children cases. As always, we welcome your questions, and our switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120. Also, our chat room is open, and we will be keeping our eye on it for any interesting comments or questions. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan.
Hi, everyone.
And from Sin City, Nevada, we have the crime doctor himself, writer and author, Denny Griffin. Denny, it's good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Simon. Hi, Jan. How you doing? I hope you're feeling better and well recovered from your fall.
Oh, I am getting much better. Thank you.
It's good.
And, Denny, you didn't bring any mobsters with you today?
My mobsters, I think, are taking off for Palm Sunday.
Oh, okay. You're right. they're all in church.
Right.
Let's kick the program off with some updates. Jan, there was some news in the Summer Thompson case.
Yeah, they arrested someone for murdering her. It was, if for those of you that just refresh your memory, Summer Thompson was abducted back in October, I believe it was, where she was walking away. She was walking back home from school with her brother and her sister, and they had a little argument, so she ran ahead of them, and that was the last they ever seen of her. Well, come to find out, when she ran off, there was a man that lived not very far from them, just around the corner, a few houses down or whatever, and he ended up grabbing her and bringing her into his home. She sexually abused her, and then they said that she was, the cause of death was
asphyxiation.
Yes, thank you. So, but it was Jared Harrell was the man's name. And they charged him with first-degree premeditated murder, sexual battery on a victim under 12, and lewd battery on a victim under 12. They said that they probably are going to go after the death penalty for him, too.
If I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't he already in custody? I seem to recall that maybe I've got that wrong. No.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh.
I'm not following you there. Sorry about that.
Oh, sorry. My mistake. Apparently, the investigators relied on DNA evidence to get this.
Yeah, I believe they had DNA evidence and some other stuff too that they found inside his house. So it looks like a pretty tight case. So I don't know anything more about it right now.
Okay, there was another case that came up this week. Again in Florida, there seems to be something magic about Florida, and it concerns a gentleman by the name of David Lanham, who apparently was an elementary school teacher, and he's been accused of at least 17 sex acts on a child. Ages ranging from, I believe, 5 to 10 years old.
Yeah, 5 to 11 years old.
But yeah. This broke when? What, Tuesday, Wednesday, somewhere around there?
Which was the 26th is when I wrote, when I found out about it anyway. It was around, somewhere around then. I don't know the dates on it.
Denny.
I have it in front of
me. Yes.
What on earth is going on? Why are we're seeing so many cases concerning young children.
Simon, can I back up a little bit? Maybe you and Jane can help me out here, but to the Sommer case?
Sure.
Sommer case. I believe it was Geraldo I was listening to last night, and that subject was addressed on that show. Now, the trouble is there's so many of these cases, unfortunately, that sometimes I get the facts jumbled here.
I do the same thing.
Time. But my recollection is, and you guys please correct me if I'm wrong, that this bird that they've charged in that case had been in trouble in the past. And was he the one that was also at 55 counts of child porn?
Yeah.
That's what you were talking about.
Right.
Like I said, I'd do the same thing, Danny, getting my case.
Right. In fact, you have jarred my memory. I believe that he was actually arrested not a million miles from where Jen and I live. It was in Meridian, Mississippi.
About 100 miles from us.
Yeah, and they have him on 55 counts of possessing child pornography and molestation, although he has pled not guilty to that.
I think maybe even somebody from the chat room would know if nobody else does. My recollection, too, from the report I heard last night was that he was under suspicion or arrested for the child porn stuff, or under suspicion of it, I guess. And his computer was seized before he got a hold of Summer.
Yeah, before they got a hold of her?
Yeah, they were so backlogged to do a forensic examination of the computer to actually charge him and lock him up that he got a hold of her in between times. In other words, they had what they thought was a case against him. They got a search warrant, apparently took the computer, but didn't get to check it.
Yeah, didn't his friend or somebody turn the computer over to the police?
Supposedly. I'm not sure just how it got to them, but apparently somebody...
You're right, and then it was, like you said, put on the back burner.
Yeah.
Until they found out, and then they found out about Summer after that.
Yeah, but in the meantime, while they were waiting to have the computer checked and him actually officially charged, you know, and locked up, he was still out, and he got a hold of her in the meantime. So,
right.
You know, you wonder, you keep hearing these things, and you say, how can this happen? How many more cases do you have to hear about where you could... You know, say maybe the ball was dropped again. Had they had the manpower or resources or whatever to get that computer in, check it quickly, he might have been behind bars and earlier and not had the chance to do this, allegedly, this other crime and kill this young girl. And he's had problems in the past, this guy, and we've talked previously. The old three strikes, you're out, the law and all that stuff we've talked about with these sexual predators, what about one strike and you're in?
There it is.
This guy, as far as I know, didn't kill anybody before, but, he's had problems. He's demonstrated he's a child predator. My argument would be that once they had him the first time or second time, whatever, that should have been the end to him.
Well, what bothers me is that whenever there is a case of child molestation, you know, there's a hue and cry, you know, that this shouldn't be allowed to happen, what's going on? And yet, I can tell you an absolutely true story, that the authorities are genuinely very slow to respond. Jan and I received a videotape that someone sent to us wondering if it happened to be of a young girl. It was a case we were following out of northern Florida, and it wasn't the girl, but it was absolutely the most awful child pornography. I mean, if
they come any worse, I just can't imagine them.
And it took us a week And it took a lot of effort on my behalf, using my contacts, to actually get anyone to talk to me.
Yeah, we were trying to report it, and nobody would listen to us. They kept taking messages, we'll call you back, we'll do this, we'll do that. And it was at least a week before they finally called. And by then, I had gotten so nervous with it being on my computer, I deleted it. And it was in my email. And I told the man that did call me finally, I told him I deleted it because I was worried about it being on my computer. It was so disgusting. We didn't even watch it, but what, 10 seconds of it,
yep.
And we'd had enough. Because I had no idea what it was completely whenever I opened it.
Yeah,
it just took me by shock.
So, I mean, you know, what's wrong with the system here? Now, that video might have been taken 5 years ago. I don't know. But equally, it might have been taken, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Something we don't know. We don't
right.
know where it come from. We don't know anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to an undercover FBI agent in Florida. He was unable to help because he's in Florida and we're in Mississippi. And unless we had proof that the tape...
In fact, the woman that did send it to me sent it to us to try to get help, because she had called, and they told her she would have to report it to the county where the video was recorded at. Now, how was she supposed to know that? I mean, they surely don't have that stamped on the video, you know, where it's at, not for something like that. And she had no idea, and she wanted some, you know, for it to get to the proper authorities, but she didn't know how to do it. That's why she sent it to us,
right.
trying to get help.
And I'll tell you what, it's a damn hard job finding the proper authorities. In the end, I called an ex-FBI friend of mine. He was the lead investigator on the Ted Kaczynski Unabomber case, and he managed to get some wheels greased. But I mean, the average man in the street wouldn't stand a chance. You know, child pornography is everywhere, and it's no wonder, because no one seems to be doing anything. I mean,
that's the truth.
Yeah, very, very annoying.
You know, Simon, I've talked with some people in the past that are experts in the field of this whole thing, investigating the child porn and the sexual predators and all that, and they tell me that using the internet, some of these child porn people, they not only have their communities and chat rooms and so on and so forth, they're actually in competition to see who can get the most victims.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Who can get the most dramatic video, you know, these types of things. They're actually in competition with each other to be king of the hill. And it's, I don't mean to laugh because it's funny. I guess
you laugh to keep from crying.
Laugh.
Oh.
Yes, I have heard similar things. And it's truly disgusting. Okay, another case that there was some movement on this week was the Mark Buchel story. He's been missing since last December, and the body of a young child has been found. The authorities are not willing to say for sure that it is Mark. They claim it's going to take them up to a month to make a positive ID, but the authorities certainly think it's likely to be him. He was the only missing child in that area for quite some time.
Yeah, this is the little boy that from New York that was with his mother's boyfriend, and they were supposed to be getting dressed to go to a relative's house, and apparently the front door was supposed to be open, and the little boy walked out while the man was getting dressed or whatever he was doing, and the boy hasn't been seen since. And they do say now, though, at first the man that was the mother's boyfriend wasn't the suspect, but now the police have admitted that he is a person of interest. So the little boy was found inside a duffel bag only about 2 blocks from his home. They throw these kids away like they were yesterday's trash, and that is so sad. They don't deserve this.
I don't know what the world is coming to. I won't say it's good news, because it's really not good news, but there were some arrests made in New Jersey. I think it was on Friday. There were 5 children that went missing in 1978. They were all teenagers, 16 years old, approximately. And here we are, 32 years later, and the cops have just arrested Lee Anthony Evans, age 56, and his cousin Philander Hampton, age 53. They've been charged on 5 counts of murder, and in fact there was a third man that was named as a suspect, but Maurice Woody Olds actually died 2 years ago. So there is living proof that cold cases do sometimes come back to life. The story in this one is that some evidence, a witness, came forward a few months ago, and they did actually reopen the case, and sure enough, they now have their guys. So in this particular instance, there is some justice. But how many cases are there where there is no justice, where we never know what happened to the child? We never know who did what.
Simon, you know, I was thinking, last week, I believe it was, I talked about the Hannah Mack case out of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, when I was researching that, one of the people I spoke with told me that the live-in boyfriend of the mother, who ended up not being charged in the girl's death, even though the his friend claimed and testified in court that the guy was involved with him. Apparently there wasn't enough forensic evidence to charge him. They only had the other fellow's statement. But this guy's doing basically life, I think 99 years or something, for possession of child porn. And one of the people I was speaking with said, you know, the child porn laws, now that most states are getting tougher and tougher with the child porn. There are a few exceptions, but they're cracking down on the sentencing in some of these cases, and there's now federal stuff, that if you seize the computer of one of these individuals and it's got the child porn on it, you don't need anybody else to testify. In other words, children don't have to go to court and be put through that turmoil of being grilled possibly by a defense attorney and so forth. The computer and the contents of it themselves are the proof, the evidence that's needed to put these individuals away for lengthy, lengthy sentences. And that's certainly a good thing. It takes the onus off having to get usually very young children in that type of environment, having to testify in a criminal trial. And the issue there seems to be then of not only showing that the porn was on there, but that tying the computer to the defendant. You have to, you know, unless they say that the computer was shared by 8 people in the house or something. But that seems to be the main obstacle in those types of cases. So that is a little bit of encouraging news on the child pornography front. So I was glad to hear that.
Do you think that the sentences that these people are getting fit the crime? Are they acting as a deterrent?
Well, you know, I think these people, and I don't want to raise the issue of mental competency. I don't want to indicate that they should all be let loose because they have some kind of an illness. But these people are not quite right, in my opinion. Doesn't mean they don't know what they're doing. Doesn't mean that they can't be held criminally responsible for their actions by any stretch. But I think they're addicted, like people are addicted to alcohol or what have you, or drugs. I think these people are into this. They're addicted to it. And the sentences, I think, in some cases for molestation, let's say they are caught with child porn, and they are actually charged with molesting a specific individual or multiple children. There you've got to go through the court process, in a trial in most cases, to get your guilty verdict. And then I've heard on various cable network crime shows and crime news shows some of the ridiculous sentences these people get. I'm not talking severe, I'm talking about light. Probation, 30 days, 90 days. It's, you know, for raping 4 or 5, 6-year-old children. In some cases, it's gone on for years. And I can't believe it. You know, I mean, I just shake my head and say, why? I just don't understand it. And the people of these jurisdictions where this happens, I think, have to rise up and demand that the judges in their areas be replaced. If they're going to not punish or not adequately punish the offenders, and then at the same time protect the public, protect the children by putting these people where they can't at least get to the children. My claim is that as long as they're drawing breath, they're a threat to somebody. But at least getting them off the street is a start. Get them away from the kids. And I think these judges and so forth that don't do that, that aren't doing their job, they're not serving the people, and I think they need to be replaced.
I'm in agreement. You mentioned cable crime shows. I know you had to leave a little early on yesterday's program, but your cohort in crime, Vito Colucci, mentioned that you're engaged in a crime show that's going to be appearing on TV called Crime Wire. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Crime Wire?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. For quite some time, I've been involved primarily in Blog Talk Radio with cases where deaths of primarily young people, not necessarily children, but young adults, even teenagers and young adults, have been ruled or determined to be accidental or suicide. Yet there's quite a bit of disturbing information to indicate that possibly foul play was involved and the case could have been a homicide. And a lot of the parents, next of kin to the victim, generally it's a mother that I've dealt with, have fought the system in some cases for years and years, trying to get the case reopened, another look taken at it, the death certificate changed, what have you. And they run out of stamina, they run out of resources to do their own investigations. So Crime Wire, our intent of the program is to take cases like this. Obviously, you can't do them all. There are, unfortunately, way too many of them. But take cases and profile them and hopefully bring attention to the case possibly exert a little pressure on the local police agency or district attorney to take a second look. And at least, if nothing else, provide the family with some answers. That's one of the most frustrating things these ladies tell me is they can't get any answers. They have a piece of evidence or multiple pieces of evidence that they think points to a certain direction, and all they get is, well, we don't believe that's the way it happened, or yes, that did happen, but it doesn't mean anything. Well, they want to know why doesn't it mean anything. Please explain to us why the facts we're pointing out to you don't have a bearing on the case or reopening your investigation. So we hope to be able to assist in cases like those where people can't think they aren't getting justice. We hope to be able to help them get their case looked at maybe a second time, or in some cases actually for the first time. So we're quite excited about it. And
you have got a pilot episode. I know that because I've seen it.
Okay.
And is it A&E that's going to be running it, hopefully?
A&E has expressed an interest in it, and I believe it was the end of this past week, Friday or so, the demo, the sizzler, as they call it, DVD was delivered to one of their production bosses. So we're hoping that in the next few days to get some feedback on that.
I was very impressed by the demo. I think you did an excellent job.
Well, thank you, Mr. Simon. Coming from you, it's a real compliment.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the Kaylee Anthony case. Another frustrating case. One that just makes me want to tear my hair out. Let's see what happened this week. Okay, we have the wonderful rumor that George Anthony had an affair with a young lady who was one of the searchers, I believe. She goes by the name of River Cruz. That's not her real name, by the way. Her real name is Crystal Holloway. I mean, why anyone would need an alias if you're just helping find missing children is kind of beyond me. Anyway, the story goes that Miss Cruz decided to sell her story to the National Enquirer. Well, that's kind of backfired a bit. Miss Cruz took quite a lot of flack this week, and on Thursday was actually admitted to hospital. She tried to, apparently, tried to commit suicide by overdosing on a bottle of children's aspirins or something.
Hey, now, let's be fair now. If they want to say she tried to commit suicide and everybody don't believe her, I mean, after all, George said he did and everybody believed him, which I don't.
To me, it's all a bit of a sideshow, but
right.
there's one article that I read where Dr. Lillian Glass, who apparently is a renowned communication and body language expert, has revealed that she believes River Cruz is being truthful in her statements. She's basing this on, I believe, a phone conversation and looking at some video of Miss Cruz talking to the press. Now, make that, make of it what you will. Sounds like a load of BS to me, but... There was also a huge, huge amount of evidence released this week something like 1,000 pages. And I can honestly say I have not had a chance to go through it all. I spent most of today actually plowing through it. And there are some interesting things that I came across. Certainly, I now have a much greater appreciation for what a horrible job the police have in this case. I mean, there's evidence everywhere, and trying to figure out, you know, what's really important and what is nonsense must be a real headache for them. The one piece of evidence that was released that I did find very, very revealing was an interview with Tim Miller of Equisearch. He's been quoted as saying that Casey was smiling and happy during the time that Tim was actually in the Orlando area searching for Kaylee. And yet, in the deposition, or the, you know, transcript of the police interview, that's not really the truth. Tim actually admits that they spent probably 12 hours over 4 days at the Anthony household, and one of the things that he wanted Casey to do was actually just mark a map, you know, a spot where they might start searching. Casey got huffy and left the room. Cindy got downright ugly and threw him out. Him and everyone else.
Yeah.
What do you make of that, Denny?
Who was it a few minutes ago said they were ready to pull their hair out? but all I can say is ditto. I mean, I had a back way. I was, when this thing first broke, I was into it like 24/7. I was talking a little while ago about addiction. I was addicted to that case. And I got to the point where it was actually affecting my mental health, I think. I was consumed by it. I had to back way off on it because it was starting really to get to me. And every time I hear more of this soap opera type stuff and the things that don't make sense and the things that happen and don't happen and should have happened and might have happened, and it just, my blood is boiling. That's all I can say. Every time I hear any of this crap, all those memories from days gone by of how I felt at the time come back, and I'm ready to strangle somebody.
Yes, I can understand that. nevertheless, I'm going to keep your toes to the flames here, just for another minute. Do you recall Cindy on many occasions shouting from the rooftops that she had no clue who this Zanny the Nanny was?
Yes,
I do.
Yeah. Well, in the evidence that was released this week, there's a fascinating police report where on July 16th, 2009, Cindy claims that she had Zanny's phone number on what I'm guessing was a post-it note, and she gave it to law enforcement. Now, this apparently was investigated, and absolute bullshit. So I think the lesson to be learned here is that we know where We know where Casey gets it from.
Yeah, that's so true. But, you know, what I still, the question I keep asking myself over and over and over again is, isn't it, they say it's not illegal to lie to a cop, but if it's an ongoing investigation and you deliberately do something to steer the investigation to a different direction, isn't that illegal?
It certainly should be, depending on the jurisdiction you're in, hindering the prosecution, obstructing, there should be.
Right.
Some,
I mean.
I always heard now, Jan, that it was not okay to lie to the police. It was okay for the police to lie to the suspect.
But look how many times Cindy herself has done it. She has went over and over and over lying to him just to get, I mean, with the hairbrush, with the clothes, with the trunk of the car. I mean, everything, every time you turn around, with what Kaylee was, with that shirt that she had. I mean, every time you turn around, the toothbrush, everything. And yet they still let the, they babying her and pampering her like the grieving grandmother, which I'm sorry she lost her granddaughter, but she has no right to interfere in this investigation unless it's truthful.
Okay, let's take a caller. We have someone coming in from Denny's neck of the woods, area code 702. You're on the air. What's your name and what's your question for us?
My name is Jay. It's just a comment, and I'm just wondering if you observed this. Do you remember when Casey came home and she was in her house? After that, the parents were wearing those T-shirts, and it had the butterfly, and it said, "Fly home, sweet baby."
I remember something about it, but not for sure.
Yeah, so I think that they knew at that time, because why else would they say fly home?
Honestly, now I'm not going to say I think that they were involved with her death, but I do believe they knew something after it happened, before they, well, maybe not before they called the 911, but right within time after that, I believe.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that they knew, and they had to play the role of the grieving parents, grieving grandparents, rather, to protect Casey.
Right. I just thought that was ironic that they wore those T-shirts that they had made with the butterfly, because that's more of a memorial than a looking for me, because it was after that that they had that, instead of, they used to wear the "Have You Seen Me?" Then after that, it was "Fly Home, Sweet Baby."
True. I never thought of it that way, but you're right.
Yes, that is an interesting observation.
Yeah, as soon as she got home and that all that stuff, when Leonard Padilla got her out, that's when they started wearing those T-shirts. So I think they knew then.
Yeah, I do believe they did too.
Okay,
okay,
cool. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Actually, in another part of Tim Miller's interview, he says something else interesting. Right after this map episode where Casey decides to just leave the table and go hide in a bedroom, Miller is left temporarily with George and one of George's friends. The friend is unnamed. Tim can't remember. All he remembers is that it's an ex-law enforcement gentleman from, I think, Iowa, who was visiting to offer moral support. And and George's friend pipes up, "The answer is in the bedroom, but the effing bitch won't talk."
Yeah, and this is one of George's friends.
Right.
They knew. I still say they knew. I've always said that they knew. There was just too much trying. It was too obvious they were trying desperately to cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so obvious. if you don't have anything to hide, you wouldn't try covering things up.
Or try this one on for size. I believe it was the first day or second day that Tim Miller was talking to the Anthonys, and good old Jose Baez turned up.
Mm-hmm.
And Baez thanked Miller for searching, but asked that Tim Miller not have any contact with his client. So the in this interview, the police asked the question, Mr. Miller, you know, approximately how many, you know, serious searches have you been involved in? And Tim replied, 1,100 or something like that. And how many times have you been asked not to talk to the person that saw the missing child last? And Tim replied, this is the first time.
I just couldn't believe that, and that floored me. But it didn't surprise me with Baez.
Okay, let's take another caller. We have actually two callers, both coming in from the 914 area code. 914, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, I found a...
You're gonna go to
fucking hell. just kidding, nigger.
Okay, looks like we've got a bunch of these again this week. I'm not quite sure why people want to do that, but such is life. Okay, back to this evidence. There was another interesting segment. There's a lady by the name of Joy Ray, who apparently was a Texas EquiSearch volunteer. And I think it's fair to say that Tim Miller probably needs to improve the quality of his volunteer selection process. This woman is an absolute whack job. In the police reports, at one point she tells them that she is a spy for President Bush and that Leonard Padilla has threatened to kill her if she testifies in the court case.
Oh, and don't forget that she does have the recipe for Bush's baked beans.
Oh, yeah, that's a beauty. Denny, would this... Do you think this would make a great credible witness?
Sure.
Well, we're not sure if this is the same lady, but she is a person that's claiming to have photographs that can prove that, you know, that area was searched. And we happen to know that Baez keeps talking about a witness.
Yeah, that has photos of where Kaylee's body was found to prove that her body was not there. And then from the way I understand it now, this is what I read. Nobody told me this specifically, but I read that they said that the photos was not even of the spot where she was found. I mean, this woman is completely a whack job.
Oh, I think she'd be perfect for the defense.
You were talking about that Tim Miller should be more particular about his volunteers. I think Jose Baez better get better witnesses.
Sounds like she fit right in.
Yeah, well, that's true too. But also, she even claimed that she was working for him at one time, giving a tour or something of the area where Kaylee was found. I think that's what it said anyway. I might have it mistaken, but that's something, it's about what she said.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what all she said, claimed that she had done.
Dan, didn't, I believe you, and I know I mentioned it in the past numerous times, I think, about this whole deal about the information that Baez claimed and his team claimed to have that would exonerate their client in a heartbeat. And we've speculated, you know, if they've got this stuff, why is she still in jail?
Right.
Well, I do believe that the deadline was February the 1st for that revealing evidence.
And we haven't seen it. No, you're right. They did claim that they had positive proof. And my big question was, why in the world, if they had positive proof, would they have their client sit in jail and put this trial off until 2011 if she could be proven innocent? He says she wants her day in court. Now, we all know the lifestyle Casey Anthony has. That doesn't sound like a choice of hers. If she could prove that she did not do this, she'd have had him out. She'd have fired Baez by now and had somebody else get her out.
I can honestly say that I have never seen the inside of a jail cell. And it's just not high on my list of neat things to do. But if I was in a jail cell, I would be doing everything in my ability to get out of that jail cell. So, you know, this nonsense about irrefutable evidence is just that. I mean, she is not getting out until after the trial, and I'm pretty certain that after the trial, she's not getting out.
Yeah, you're good points, and I think that's true. If Baez had this information, actual information, that would spring her, you know, like now or months ago, actually, and didn't use it, didn't produce it, I would think that he ought to be on his way to disbarment. I mean, that would be some type of
mail.
Yes, I would think.
Well, the only thing that it would prove to me is if he did honestly have something that could prove beyond the shadow of a doubt and convince a jury that she was innocent, then he should, for holding back on it all this time, then not only that, but he should be really held in contempt of court or whatever. He really should be something legally done to him.
Well, I mean, you can see where this is going to lead. I mean, they're going to find Casey guilty, and immediately Casey is going to change lawyers and claim an appeal, you know, based on
representation.
Right.
But the only thing good now is that you got to admit, too, Stan Strickland, the judge, has been very cautious about this, and he has made sure that she is in courtroom every time now and made her make a statement herself that she was fully aware of what was going on. So that way they can't come back and say that she wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been very careful about that, making rulings that I don't always agree with, but he's a smart man, and he's handling it to try to prevent that.
Oh, I would say that he has given Baez much more leeway than probably many other judges would have done.
Yes, he has. Not to mention that new lawyer they got.
Oh, good Lord. the man from
hell. I'd
like
to smack that man.
he's the sort of person that if you met him on the street and he asked you what the time was, you'd probably want to slap him. I mean, there's just something about his whole demeanor. The other thing I noticed this morning, I was doing some Googling, is that ABC is still taking quite a bit of heat over this $200,000 that they paid for photos. The latest volley actually comes from the Society for professional journalists, and they just blasted ABC over it.
But they're not very happy with them.
Let's talk for a few minutes about the Hayley Cummings case. An interesting week. I guess the big news, which has absolutely nothing to do with Hayley Cummings, is that William Cobra Storbs has got his life back together. Last Wednesday, a plea deal was reached. He pled nolo contendere to a simple battery complaint by Daniel Snodgrass. And what's really interesting is the terms. Cobra now finds himself on 1 year probation. Special terms of the probation are that he will not investigate anything in the Seventh Circuit District, which includes Putnam County and three surrounding counties. When I spoke to Cobra, Cobra was just ecstatic. He said, "I have no plans on ever going back to Putnam County. There's plenty of roads around Putnam."
Can't blame the man.
Right. So, you know, if you live in Putnam County, don't expect to be seeing Cobra anytime soon. The other parts of the agreement are really quite interesting. It was almost as if Cobra got away scot-free. He does have to check in monthly while he's on this year's probation, but get this, he can do it by mail. I mean, when was
never heard of that one. Well, I've never been on probation, but I know people that have.
When was the last time you heard of anything like that?
Unless it's something in Florida, I don't know.
Right. He also has to do a drug test every 3 months. Seeing as Cobra doesn't do drugs, not really much of an issue there. He is allowed to carry and own guns, you know, assuming he's not breaking any laws with them. Again, that's, you know, very strange for a probation agreement. Now, the one that I did get a chuckle out of is that he can hang around bad people because of the nature of his work, right? So Cobra can go to dens of iniquity and just basically hang out with whoever he wants, as long as it's within the scope of his job, which is busting bad people. One other minor but again interesting provision is that he is allowed to go down to his local bar and have a rum and coke. Right? It specifically says in the probation document that he is permitted to go out drinking. But obviously, he has to do it within reason. Now, Denny, you've been around lots of criminals in your life. Have you ever heard of a probation thing like that?
As a matter of fact, I haven't. Glad to hear it in this case, but I would have to, in my experience, that would be the exception and not the rule.
Yeah, that was what I thought. In fact, when we've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, because the deal itself's been on the table since mid February, I believe. And you know, I was beginning to think that, you know, Cobra was just spinning me a yarn. You know, I had never heard of such a thing. But no, those are the official terms, and I do have a copy of the probation agreement. Really quite something.
And just to make this clear, because there was some argument about these charges being a felony, he was not convicted of a felony charge. It was a misdemeanor. If he was convicted of a felony, he had never given his guns back or the right to carry his guns to begin with.
Right.
I just wanted to clear that up because there was some argument that he was convicted of a felony, but it was not a felony charge.
No, it's a misdemeanor of simple battery. In fact, in Florida, it's known as the touch or strike law.
Well, even admits that he did this. Everybody says, well, he was guilty, guilty, guilty. If not, he wouldn't have pled guilty. He didn't plead guilty. But, yes, he was guilty of hitting a guy or whatever, threw him to the ground or whatever it was he done to him. But he was not guilty. He has the right. I mean, he got the right charge if he had to have anything on him at all.
Well, technically, he shouldn't have had any charges.
That's
at all.
That's why I said if anything at all. No,
right.
He shouldn't have.
Okay. The other news that was swirling around is that Misty supposedly has failed yet another polygraph. This is like her fourth or fifth. So, you know, my question is, why would this one be any different?
I don't know.
Denny, would you expect Misty to suddenly pass a poly?
No, I would be shocked if she did, actually. So, yeah, I'm not sure if this is big news or not.
Well, I think it's pretty much unnews. going back to polygraphs, apparently Tommy Croslin wants to do one now. He thinks that he can get out of jail free, you know, through a poly, which he can't because, you know, he hasn't been charged with anything to do with Haley. He's been charged to do with things to do with drugs. Anyway, Tommy wants the poly, but his lawyer claimed on national TV earlier this week that he wanted a neutral examiner rather than someone connected with the with law enforcement. I can't see that it's going to make any difference. Can you, Denny?
Not really. No, I wouldn't think that should be a major hang-up in not doing it myself. If he's telling the truth or lying, it's going to come out, I would think, no matter who administers it.
Right. I mean, most polygraphs are inadmissible in a courtroom. That there are exceptions. But it's just a tool. It's an investigative tool. Gives you an idea of if the person is likely telling the truth or likely telling you a pile of lies. I don't think it matters two hoots. If you know, law enforcement does it, or some you know, so-called neutral examiner does it.
I'm with you, Simon. A lot of these cases, I think if the defendant, for example, can get a favorable polygraph, they love to get that out on the news, you know, about, hey, my client passed the polygraph, and all that kind of crap for PR purposes, but. Like you say, in most cases, they aren't admissible anyway. They are a tool. And for investigators, it's an investigative tool. And for defendants, in a lot of cases, it's something to use as a PR move, I think.
Right. Unfortunately, we are going to have to cut this show a little bit short this week. We have some other commitments. But before we do wrap it up, Denny, I believe you have a program on Tuesday. Do you want to give us a quick plug for that?
I would love to, Simon. Yeah, we're going to be, Kim Colton, my co-host, and I are on the Seeking Justice show on Blog Talk, and we're going to be talking with about a case from 1988. It was a murder case of a 32-year-old woman named Debbie Whitlock, and the case was cold for 9 years. But Debbie's mom, Jackie McDonald, conducted her own investigation, and a very thorough job she did. She kept the case alive for 9 years. Eventually, her information led to the arrest and conviction of the killer of her daughter. And it's really a remarkable story, and there's been a book written about it, and Jackie has received several awards from various groups for her tenacity in hanging in there and getting justice for her daughter. So it's going to be a very interesting show, I believe, and an uplifting show, and that justice can be served if you have the perseverance to stick with it. And that's going to be on 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific this Tuesday night.
Great. Oh, and I did want to ask you, I meant to do this earlier on, your Crime Wire series, do you have any kind of website or anything to support it?
As a matter of fact, we do. It's www.crimewiresite, one word, CRIMEWIRESITE. .com, and the site just became operational last week. It's still under construction, but there is enough available there. You can get a general idea of what we're going to be doing. So I encourage anybody to go to that site if they would like. And we don't have the link up on the site yet, but there's, if you go to Two Real Productions, that's the number 2, R-E-E-L, productions.com, and go to the CrimeWire page, and you'll see a link to the demo. That's the one you saw, Simon, a demo of the first episode. It's about a 14-minute tape, so if anybody would like to check that out, you can get to that one from the Two Real Production site, and then the CrimeWire site, as I say, is operational but still under construction.
Well, what I'll do, Denny, is put those links in my my little text wrap-up of today's program. So,
thank you very much, Simon. I appreciate it.
Good luck with it.
No problem. Any parting thoughts on missing children and the cases we've been talking about today?
Yeah. I think the people of the country, and not just parents, because most of us, even if you don't have children, you have sisters and brothers, nieces, nephews, what have you, and I really think the people have to mobilize and use their power to get the legislators in their jurisdictions or on the federal level to pay attention, to recognize the problem, and let them know that the people have had it, and that we're demanding tougher legislation, tougher sentences, and I don't say we'll ever clean the problem up entirely, but anything we can do that will lessen, that will save the life of one child, and I don't mean physically being killed, that's the worst case scenario, but mentally destroyed by being abused or taken advantage of over a period of years, anything we can do to help even one kid, I think is a step in the right direction and it's worth pursuing.
Jan.
Yeah, well, when you're talking about missing children, I do believe now, for some reason, it seems that this is more and more people are more aware of it, and they're looking out for it more, and I think a lot of people are tired of it and wanting to do something about it, and that's the first step, trying to get everybody in agreement that something has to be done, and I think that's a good thing. But in my closing thoughts, we haven't forgot our little Haley Cummings. This is where all this is about to begin with, and it's heartbreaking to know that it's been all this time that we haven't found this little girl. And I still in my heart refuse to give up that she's gone. I won't believe that until I see some kind of evidence. And my prayers go with her every night, every day, every morning, and they will continue until we find out what happened to her. God bless little Kaylee. Be with her wherever she is.
Okay, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a wonderful day. Denny, I want to thank you for taking time out to talk with us, and every success with CrimeWire.
Thank you very much, and it's always my pleasure, Simon. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being with us, Denny.
Okay. We will talk to everyone next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.